And we pick the story up again in Genesis chapter 45, verses 1 to 15. And you'll find that on page 43 of the Pew Bibles. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, "Send everyone away from me." So no one stayed with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still alive?" But his brothers could not answer him, so dismayed were they at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. He said, "I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are 5 more years in which there will be neither ploughing nor harvest. God sent me before you to preserve you for a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. He has made me a father to Pharaoh and lord of all his house and ruler over all the land of Egypt. Hurry and go up to my father and say to him, 'Thus says your son Joseph, God has made me lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not delay. You shall settle in the land of Goshen, and you shall be near me, and your children and your children's children, as well as your flocks, your herds, and all that you have. I will provide for you there, since there are 5 more years of famine to come, so that you and your household and all that you have will not come to poverty. And now your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my own mouth that speaks to you. You must tell my father how greatly I am honored in Egypt and all that you have seen. Hurry and bring my father down here." Then he fell upon his brother Benjamin's neck and wept, while Benjamin wept upon his neck. And he kissed all his brothers and wept with them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. We thank God for his word and pray for our hearing and our understanding.
The trouble with dealing with a story like Joseph is there is so much in it, it's quite hard to know where to begin. In the scheme of things, we are working our way through from the beginning of the Bible and beginning to explore together the great family as it's known. Really, what we're beginning to look at is our story through this great family of which we are a part today. Way, way back, many centuries ago, not long after the Bible began, but probably a long time after the universe had exploded with life, and this planet Earth had people who loved stories. Stories that they passed on from one generation to another. Stories that named the life around them. Stories that explained life and their beginnings. And here we have one of those stories. As we travel through Genesis, we're exploring stories that are about all of the beginnings. So we've begun to travel with Abraham and Sarah and their descendants to see how a promise can be fulfilled. The story is nearly always one of stepping out into the unknown. But it's also about a journey of faith. The thing that sets the great family apart is faith. Faith that a promise that was given to them will be fulfilled. The great family is different from others because they introduce the idea that there is one God. In amongst all of the other gods that were being talked about and trusted, here comes this family who set out into the known, unknown, saying there's just this one God and that all our lives are part of God's life. Part of the promise is that they will be a blessing for the whole earth. And as they do that, they challenge the order of things in the world. They're always people crossing boundaries, going to new places. Perhaps it's an explanation of our constant curiosity with life, our desire to push at boundaries, as well as a story that's about good and evil, God and people. Often the stories include something or someone that's being lost or found. And there's some of that in the Joseph story too. One of the abiding themes of the book of Genesis is that of family conflict and reconciliation. One of the things we clearly know about these stories is that the people that are part of this great family are not great people. Some of the times, they're pretty awful. It's a story that is full of the heights and the depths and the deepest passions of life. The things that cause people to murder, the things that would make you sell a brother, the things that would make you lie to your father. It's part of the feuding and the understanding of human relationships, which we see around us in the world all the time. And so each story that we have, it's like it holds up a mirror so that we can study our own lives. It doesn't say, here's what you must do, now go. It says, can you see any of yourself in these people or these situations? Can you see what happens when a person does this? Can you understand the consequences of certain actions? Last week we walked with Jacob, a man who began life competing and spent life being tricked and tricking others, a man scarred by favoritism that never learned the lesson about the damage done to relationships when people are treated unfairly. It's a very male story. And somewhere in it, Jacob maintains a thread of faith that sees God at work fulfilling the promise. But it seems only a thread at times. On the one hand, you can understand Jacob's dilemma. He hadn't wanted Leah, his first wife. He was tricked into marrying her. Rachel was a prize he'd worked long years for. I can understand that. And prospered whilst he did so. But we can only imagine the strife in his camp as Leah bears son after son. It seems like Jacob only has to look at Leah and she falls pregnant. And Rachel bears the humiliation of barrenness, struggling to fulfill what society saw as her purpose. I'm glad I don't live in those days. Then finally, Rachel has her day and bears Joseph and Benjamin, two sons, and Jacob does what his own father had done. He loved them more because of the struggle and because of Rachel's joy. But from a distance, it's not fair. It was never fair that all his other sons should feel second best. And really, from then on, the consequences of Jacob's inability to learn from the past sets a course for his family into the future. Often we only get little episodes or small glimpses of the lives of characters in the Bible, but the Joseph story, as with Jacob, is told from birth to death. It's a whole life story. We're with him at the beginning when he's born, and we're with Joseph at his deathbed in chapter 50. Similarly with Jacob. In fact, if we just put the two deathbed scenes together and looked at those, we would learn masses. Jacob, who is still conniving and favoring when Joseph brings his own sons for blessing, creating more chaos. In contrast, when we get to the end of Joseph's story, his thoughts will be about the future and back to God's promise. But then he plays a very different role in the story of the great family. His life explains why the Israelites are in Egypt and enslaved there. You can begin to see on ahead to what's coming next, to the real importance of Joseph getting these people there. Poor, poor Joseph's story, with his dreams and his pride, with being sold by his brothers and taken to Egypt as a slave himself. His gaining favor with his boss and then losing it because of his boss's wife. His dreams of winning him a place in Pharaoh's court and the responsibility for saving Egypt and beyond from the famine that struck. Joseph's brothers soon came to realize that removing Joseph physically did not take him out of their father Jacob's heart. In fact, the opposite happened, and the memory of Joseph consumed this family. The memory of Joseph and their jealous actions now hung between them all, dominated their lives without hope of reconciliation. And then we skip forward, facing famine. Jacob dispatches his sons. Except beloved Benjamin, too great to risk. And so they're brought to Joseph to beg for help. They don't recognize him, but he knows them. So testing his brothers, he calls them spies and demands that one stay as a hostage until they return with their youngest brother. The brothers, still racked with their guilt, recognize this is payback time. They may not know why, but they know why. Joseph overhears them and weeps privately. And so they depart with their grain, and then Joseph takes Simeon as his hostage and keeps hold of them. Back home, though, Jacob is very reluctant to let another son, Benjamin, to let him go. And so would even allow a different son to remain in Egypt in captivity, rather than send this youngest son, still always with Jacob. It's somebody is loved more. And yet somehow the guilt for those sons still keeps them going, enables them to keep on doing what Jacob asks. And finally, the famine is so severe that Jacob agrees and sends Benjamin. And when Joseph sees Benjamin, he's overcome and he weeps again privately. And then he sells them more grain, and then he plants a silver goblet. And then he accuses his brothers. And it's Benjamin's bag. And the brothers throw themselves down before Joseph and remember the dreams. The dreams which caused such hurt and anger, now the dream is fulfilled. Judah pleads eloquently for Joseph to spare Benjamin, saying it would kill their father. He implores Joseph to take him as a slave instead. Finally, Joseph, who could no longer control himself, reveals himself to his brothers, and Joseph weeps again. There's an awful lot of weeping in this story. considering we sing it in such a happy, jolly way. It says that his sobs were so loud that the Egyptians in other rooms could hear. And then there's this remarkable moment when Joseph forgives. Outstanding. Joseph forgives them. Because he sees they've changed, and so has he. And then he sends the brothers back to Jacob, and not before throwing his arms around and weeping again. Jacob and all his sons and their families, 70 people in all, not counting their wives or their daughters, which didn't count, they all moved to Egypt. And in a kind of moment that has echoes of a story Jesus will tell centuries later about another homecoming, and this time with a father's outstretched arms waiting to forgive, so Joseph cannot wait but rushes out to meet them along the way, embraces his father, and wept on his neck for a right good while. Joseph shed a lot of tears, allowing the bitterness to wash away. Reconciliation has brought peace at last, well, for a time. And they settle in Egypt to see out the famine. There's a bigger picture of salvation going on, and it's about more than Joseph. It's about forgiveness and reconciliation. It's about planning to save Egypt from famine and Israel from going out of existence. There's a much bigger story that Joseph is part of and belongs to. So what do we get from this great family? Well, it's not like it's a great set of role models for us. It describes the rivalries and jealousies, the forgiveness and the brokenness of relationships. Yet somehow, in the relationship between them, as well as the politics and power of government, God is there in the midst of it all. Not always named, often unacknowledged. Of the worst and best that we can do and be, God remains constant. In the midst, and calls us to take our place in the great family. We're still invited to bring our fears and failings, all that we are, good and bad, and see how we can be a blessing for the whole world. That was always the intention for the great family. Well, if we can remember outstretched arms waiting for us, and let love guide us, perhaps our dreams will include many who presently struggle with life on their own, and we were not made to be on our own. So the thing I love about my coat is, yes, I like the colours. I got this in Washington in Native Indian Museum there. They had a whole load of these things, and this is the one I chose. What I like about it most is, yes, I like the colours, but then on the back is the cross. And we always have those things together, which is what we offer to the world around and seek for ourselves. Even though we are, my gosh, messy people.